you look like you're tired. And
oh,
not,
so
wait, let me rephrase that. Not that you look like
Jesus.
No, that's not what I meant. You look gorgeous, always, as always. Right, right. This is Rhea, and this is Just the Who of Us, where we talk about a range of topics, including life events, current events, spirituality, entertainment, family relationships, as well as answering listener questions and more. So you already went over what stress is to you. And I know we weren't older when we started having kids. So having kids when you're kind of younger, going from being a teenager to being a young woman, being a parent, I mean, stress is kind of all throughout there because you're at different stages of your life. But
right.
In comparison, because you have an older and a younger, for me, it would be like comparing my son who's 22 to my son who's 7. A lot of that is different. They're different. I'm different. So what would you say would be the biggest difference in your parenting style with your oldest to your youngest?
I let my oldest do more things. I still worry about my oldest, but not as much as I do my youngest.
Yeah.
Like, she'll be 13 in November and I still act like she's a baby. For instance, I don't if my oldest walks home or wherever, I just make her call me when she gets home. With my youngest, this is horrible. She walks home with some other kids, and the little boy is a little older than her. He's in 8th grade. And so I always tell her, make sure you are in front of him, because if somebody's going to come kidnap you, Lord forbid, I don't want it to be you. I'd rather it be the other kid. And that sounds horrible, but it's my baby. Like, I treat her way younger than what I should. She is not a baby. She lets me know, Mom, I'm not a baby anymore. I understand that, but you're my baby. So that's the difference with those two. And then they're completely different kids. When my oldest was younger, she was, I need you. I want you. Hold me. Love me. Now she's like, you're
why
just,
are you bothering me?
It's like, you're just the person who gave birth. You're nothing special. Then my youngest, when she was younger, it was like, just change my butt and feed me and give me Kool-Aid. Like, other than that, I don't want nothing to do with you. But as I got older, she's more of the cuddly, I'll hold your hand when we're going to the store, things like that. Though now she's getting out of that. I actually noticed the other day when we went to the store that she didn't reach out to grab my hand, and it broke my heart.
Aww.
I was like, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely... That's one of the hard things about parenting, but it's one way how you kind of know you're doing things right. When they start needing you less, it's like, okay, I've taught you to do things on your own, but wait, I still need you to need me a little bit.
Yeah, like, don't ever not need me. I need you. Like, I still need my mom now.
Right.
And my mom drives me nuts sometimes, but there's still times where I'm like, how did I do this without, like, my mom had to have taught me how to do things, because I still talk to her. She's still my best friend. I still think of the way that I was raised. And I'm like, oh, well, I learned this from my mom. So naturally I will pass it on to my kids. But then there's also other things that my mom did that I would never do.
Yeah.
Not because it was bad. It's just those were the, like, this isn't the 80s anymore.
Yeah.
Like you said, times change all the time.
Yeah. But I get that though, especially when you say there's things that your mom did as close as you are that you wouldn't do. And I know for a fact, there's going to be things that our daughters will say the same about. Right. And it's not anything, you're a bad mom. Sometimes things just need to be done differently. The biggest thing that I've taken away from being a parent 22 years is that I messed a lot of stuff up. And that's okay, because that was my first time parenting.
Right.
I didn't mess up on the big things. And so that's one thing I try to teach my kids is mess up on the small stuff. Avoid the big mistakes, make the little ones. That's okay. But try not to make the big ones. Don't kill anybody. God forbid, don't get pregnant while you're still a kid. Don't sabotage your life. Stay away from the alcohol and the drugs. And you're going to make little mistakes. You might get a bad grade on a test. You're going to make a bad decision. It's going to happen. That's fine. And we as parents, we a lot of times make the small mistakes. And that's fine, because specifically with your first kid, it's literally your first time doing this.
That's how you want it. It's how you learn.
Yeah. And not everybody had two, let alone sometimes even one positive parenting experience to learn from.
Right. Exactly.
There's people who don't have one good parent. I mean, not everybody has the best of examples. And we're really just out here trying to do our best. Most of us. anyway.
Yeah.
So because the, you know, since this chapter talks mostly about stress, not that parenting is always stressful, because parenting a lot of times is we make good choices and they're easy choices and it's not all difficult and stressful. You made a comment that the biggest stressor is not knowing what the world's going to do. We literally never know what's going to happen in the world from minute to minute, let alone day to day, year to year. I completely agree with that, because I think the hardest part of that is because we can't control the rest of the world. We literally can control ourselves, our parenting, how we teach them to respond to things, but we can't control anything at all about the rest of the world. And I think that is the scariest and definitely the most stressful thing about parenting, is what we can't control, which is a lot. I think it's important to make sure that we teach our kids how to kind of operate in the world the best we can, because we can't predict the future, so we can't teach them everything. And that can be kind of stressful too, not being able to teach them literally everything they'll ever need to know.
Right.
We've only had certain experiences, and that's what we can go off of. The scariest part is the part you can't control.
A lot of it has to do with my childhood. It was being molested and not knowing that that was not okay. My mom is a great mom. I would never trade her in for anyone else, no matter how bad she upsets me or no matter how weird or awful my childhood was. I will never trade my mom for anything. But she did not teach me that it's not okay for somebody to touch you in that spot, or only mommy or the doctor or whatever the case may be. And I don't know if it's because she went through that, so she just blocked everything. My mom was molested and raped as a child. She has PTSD from it now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if she just blocked everything out, or she just figured, I won't let it happen to my kids, because she trusted who, you know, did it to me. We all did. It was kind of part of the family.
Yeah.
So me not knowing that when I was younger is one of the things that made me realize that, I'm trying to figure out how to say it. You don't know everything. You have to learn things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my kids have always known it. Nobody touches you. Nobody tells you things. Nobody's going to tell you that they're going to kill your family or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they say that. You tell me if anything like that happens.
Right.
And then other not so serious things that you can't control. My oldest, when she was a year, somehow got a piece of glitter in her eye, and she had to have surgery on her eye because it rusted.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. It's just things like that, that like I can't control the way somebody else drives, but I can control the way I drive.
Right.
I've been in plenty of accidents. Plenty of them were mine. Plenty of them were not. But I try to teach my kids that you control what you do and how you react to things.
Yeah.
You can't control what everybody else does or how everybody else feels.
You were talking about how your mother was molested, and then she didn't, you know, communicate with you kind of what to say and when to say something, things like that. And then you experienced it yourself. And then so that kind of taught you as a mom, okay, I have daughters. This is what I need to teach them so it doesn't continue to happen.
Right.
I can relate more so to your mom, because I was molested also when I was really small. And my mom made the decision to not, you know, go to the authorities or anything like that. They just kind of took care of it themselves. Just kind of took that person. They didn't like kill him or anything, but like they removed that person from my life. Let me just make that clear. But then, you know, I talked to my kids about certain things, but it took an incident happening to one of my children for me to realize, like, oh, I haven't communicated about this enough. Like, so it took that, two parts of that. It took that for me to realize, like, oh, I should talk about this more. I should talk about certain things more. And then it was also kind of for me, and I'm sure for your mom, she probably had to learn this too, that, okay, this happened to my child, but that doesn't mean it's my fault just because it was someone that we knew.
Right. You
know? And that's very difficult to, especially if someone who's been a victim of something like that, to accept, but I can't blame myself because I didn't stop it from happening to somebody else. Because again, I can't foresee or control what goes on with the, the other people in the world. So I really appreciate you bringing that up, because that's, unfortunately, it's way more common than we would like to think. Yeah. And most of the time, it is somebody we know. You know, that's just one of those things that, like, I would have never thought that I should have told my kid, oh, you know, like, make sure you do this, make sure you tell me this if so-and-so does that, because who wants to think that someone they know or they're close to or whatever is ever going to do anything bad.
Right. And you never think it's going to happen to you.
Yeah, never. And it's so commonly does. And so it's not to say that we can't ever allow our kids to be around anybody. Don't let them have friends. Don't let them socialize. But it's like a two-part thing, because it's like we have to make sure that we understand that we can't force accountability on ourselves for things that other people do.
Right.
And we can't control everything. Because if we don't teach ourselves both those things, we'll hold ourselves accountable for everything, and we'll always be scared of everything that
will make yourself and your family live in a bubble.
Yes. Yeah. And I, you know, and I'm very picky about who, like, I let my kids stay with and things like that. And I think we should be picky, but I let them have friends. I've let my daughter stay at people's houses. I ask a lot of questions. I need to know who's going to be there and everything like that. You know, we have conversations of, hey, if you need me to come get you at any time, I will be there. Call me. And it's happened before, not because of any like sexual danger or anything like that, but there has been a situation where one of my kids was like, yeah, this kid's making me uncomfortable and I want to come home. And all right, cool. I'm on the way, you know?
Okay.
And then also you mentioned how you appreciate that, like, the doctors ask permission for your daughters to do exams and things like that. And that's one thing that I noticed with my pediatrician too. They do that too. And I love it so much, because it's crazy to me to think that there are people out there who don't teach their kids that their body is theirs.
Right.
And people should ask permission to do anything, specifically as children. It's crazy to me. People don't teach that young. People don't teach their sons and daughters. This is not a spot for everybody to touch. It's not a spot for anybody to touch, unless it's the doctor and they have your permission and, you know, and so on. Not your schoolmates, not your teachers. It's crazy and I know it's not a common conversation because of the fact that the doctors specify.
Right.
You know, my pediatrician, they will tell them anytime. They even did it with my daughter, who's almost 19. Do you mind if I examine you? Do you want your mom in the room? And so, and I was so grateful for that, because, and then my younger, when she had her physical, they did the same thing. And I was so grateful, because I don't think it's something that people do enough. And it's good that the doctors are doing that, but it should also be something that we're teaching our kids too. And I just don't think that it's something that happens often enough.
Yeah, I think it's makes them uncomfortable. It reminds me of when my oldest was probably about 2, me and my husband both never had kids. This is our first child. And she smelled weird down there. And I'm like, smell her. And he says, I'm not going to smell her. And I'm like, well, I need to make sure that I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
And that it was awkward and something was wrong. I don't remember what it was. It was something small, but the fact that we couldn't as parents comfortably talk about what we needed to do with her.
Yeah.
As far as like now, both of them have started their cycles and my husband's like, don't know how to handle it or what to do. And it's like, you know, if I'm not here, you kind of need to know this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as a human society, we need to teach boys the same thing that we teach girls when it comes to cycles and things, because they're eventually possibly going to be fathers.
Yeah.
So they need to know these things. We need my youngest. She has she's got anxiety. She's got agoraphobia. It just now this year, she told me what the difference between a boy and a girl was. She knows the difference, but this year at almost 13, she finally says a boy has a penis, a girl has a vagina, because she was so embarrassed to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you not to teach your kids names for private parts are.
Right,
and
with
my
right.
oldest, because I was a new mom, I, you know, this is your whatever we called it. I don't even remember anymore.
Yeah.
But with my young, I learned not to do that. You need to be, you know, correct. This is a vagina. This is a penis. This is what a boy has. This is what a girl has.
Yeah.
And people make it so weird when your children know the correct terms of things. And it's like, why is it weird? I don't call my finger a fing-fing. Like,
right.
This is my finger. Like, this is a part of my body. So we need to stop. It's so weird for us to say, this is a penis, this is a vagina. Like, it just, it needs to stop being weird.
So I'm pretty sure with my first one, I was like that too. Wee wee and hoo-ha and whatever. But it was like, after I had my first one, when I had my daughter, I think once I had my girl, I became much more aware of certain things. And this is kind of, it's a double standard, but I am a little bit looser with certain things with my son than I am my daughter's. And it just is what it is. I don't feel bad about it. I used to, but I don't anymore, because that's just how I am.
You're not denying it. You understand.
I'm not. This is how I'm not. I'm accepting. I mean, my son is 6'5". I don't know, probably close to 300 pounds. He's a big guy. Not many people are going to bother him. And I know him intellectually. I don't have to like safeguard him like I do my girls, because they're girls. And so they're naturally more at risk.
Yep.
You know, and as much as that sucks, there's just certain things, they just are what they are. But, you know, after I had him, I had my daughter, and it was something about having a girl that I was like, no, like I need to be more like correct about things. I started calling vaginas, not hoo-haws. I call penises, not wee-wees, you know, like, and I don't know, that's just, I just made that transition because I felt like, okay, because if we make certain things to where our daughters don't want to talk about them, then they're not talking about them when we really need them to be talking about them. And, exactly. And it's when people are being inappropriate with them and stuff like that. I don't want to talk about this because these things make me uncomfortable, but we need to teach them. Don't just go showing it to everybody, but
yeah,
you can call it what it is and tell somebody every little thing that makes you uncomfortable that you've asked somebody not to do. And they do it anyway. Scream about it, because it's your body and it's your right to do.
Exactly.
And the kids, like, you know, they're still uncomfortable about certain things. And they, when they were smaller, you know, they laugh and be like, Mom, why did you call it that? And I'm like, because that's what it is. Like, I know in school they tell you not to say those words, but if you don't know what it is, you're not going to know to tell somebody when it's being mistreated. Exactly. Like, so I loved that. I love that the doctors, at least in my experiences and in your experiences, that they communicate about that and they ask permission. And they should ask boys permission too, not just girls. My experience has just been more with my daughters because they're younger. And it's not something that the pediatrician used to always do. I don't remember if they did that with my son, you know, but I was always in the room. But
they've always done it with my daughter, and she's 17. I absolutely love their pediatrician. He has been through so much. He advocates for mental health because his son played football and had a concussion. And I don't know exactly how many days or weeks, but after he was diagnosed with a concussion, he killed himself. So, I have goosebumps thinking about it right now. So he's a really big advocate for mental health. And my oldest has a lot of mental health issues, and he's very firm on, if you don't like this counselor, you tell me and we're going to find you somebody else. You don't like this therapist, you tell me and we're going to find you. If you need to call me at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, you call me. I love their pediatrician.
Yeah.
I'm going to cry when they can't see him no more.
I know. I'm just glad that, like, I still have other kids that can still go there.
Yeah.
I felt like that. I know. I told my daughter, I was like, okay, you know, you're... Because the last time she was there, they were like, you know, unless you come back before your birthday in July, this is going to be like the last time we see you. And she's been there basically her whole life. I was like, well, we're going to have to like look for you for like grown-up insurance and a grown-up doctor soon, because it's going to be about that time. They can't, you know, they can't do anything for you anymore. So I'm like, okay, well, at least I got a few more kids, so I can still keep seeing them, because I absolutely love them.
Safe with this doctor for a few more years, we're good to go.
Yeah. But then there's also how you were talking about the age gap. So I say it's a little bit different with my oldest son, and how you were talking about the difference kind of between your oldest daughter and your youngest daughter. I understand the kind of like quote unquote babying thing, because I don't feel like I'm gonna give my youngest son as much freedom and autonomy as I gave my oldest son. And that's because time, like, it's different. My oldest son, he walked to him from school. We lived off Toddville. He walked to him from high school every day because the bus was too crowded. He didn't want to ride the bus. I let him make that decision. My oldest daughter, she had to get herself on the bus in the mornings. because I had to leave for work. None of it is anything that I really wanted to do, but it's what I had to do. But I wouldn't do that now. I mean, my oldest, she could walk to her high school. It'd probably be like an hour walk. It's possible. God. Yeah. I mean, for him, it was like a 15, 20 minute walk. Wasn't a big walk. Yeah. But if something happened with cars, bus wasn't available, whatever, we could walk to school. I wouldn't have her walk to school. And realistically, if the school was 15 minutes walking distance, I don't think I'd have her walk either. It's just different. And then, so with my youngest son, my oldest son's 22, my youngest son is 7. I probably wouldn't have him walk to school. He's much smaller. It's a different time. I take most of the kids to school. It's like, it is, it's just different. And I don't think that I'm going to give my youngest son the same as I gave my oldest son.
I also feel like, and I could be wrong, one of the reasons about the difference between your oldest and your youngest is all the things you've had to dealing with your youngest when it comes to his, whatever you want to call her, or trying to make sure that he is safe with you in his life.
Yeah, that's probably definitely part of it too. Yeah. Yeah. My youngest son, he's tiny. So he's and I can't imagine he's going to be a giant.
Yeah.
Just not going to happen. So. You know,
little.
He's a petite little boy, so you know, he's not as scary. There was never really another parent that I had to kind of like, not that I have to worry about the other parent with my youngest son,
right?
But the other parent wasn't really a factor. Like, I don't know, they're very similar in a way. Not, you know, just not interacting, but I was never worried that like my oldest son, like his father was going to come scoop him up on the way to school and I would, you know, and not bring him back.
Right.
And that would have been a whole different fight. That would have been a fight I had more control over, but you know, as opposed to if that were to happen now, it'd be a much bigger fight. So yeah, that plays a factor in that, in those decisions too, until I have thousands of dollars to have a court battle.
Would be ridiculous.
So you said when your mom went through the domestic violence, you weren't really old enough to kind of know what was going on, or was there a point where you were?
I was never really old enough. I remember a few things. I remember one time coming home and my stepdad had completely ransacked the house. Every room was destroyed except mine. The kitchen, everything was pulled out of the cabinets. Everything was pulled out of the refrigerator except my insulin. And then he slashed my mom's waterbed. Every room of the house was destroyed but mine. So my mom's been through a lot of stuff, but I've never actually seen her be hit or abused. I've just seen the aftermath of things.
Right. Okay. So what you are aware of, becoming aware of it maybe later in life, how you did, how does that affect your parenting? How did that affect your dating relationship, or did it?
So I don't really know if it did or not. As everybody else, I had some shitty relationships. I was with people that I shouldn't have been with, that I knew I shouldn't have been with, was with people that I thought was right, wasn't right. When it comes to things, my parenting, we tried not to argue around the kids all the time because I know it affects them. There was one time where we did argue around them and they were crying and I was crying and it was a horrible experience for everybody. Yeah. So we tried to argue around them, but then on the other end of that, it just makes it to where my husband don't even want to argue and don't want to talk about our issues. So it causes problems there too, because he can't get his frustrations out the way he needs to.
Yeah.
But we do really good about not, I mean, we yell at each other and fuss or whatever, but thankfully I hate that I have to say this, but thankfully my husband has never laid a hand on me.
Yeah.
And it's horrible that I have to say that because of how many people are abused or in a domestic violence situation, but my husband has never in his life laid a hand on me. I've never even thought he was going to lay a hand on me.
Right.
And I'm very grateful for that because I know there are so many other people who have been in that situation.
Right. And it's hard to think about when you haven't been there yourself. And, you know, especially it seems like saying something like that, you wouldn't really have to.
Right.
You kind of don't expect yourself to have to be like, oh, well, I'm grateful we've never physically fought. I'm grateful that he doesn't abuse me, because I'm not used to that. So it's not something I would naturally think like, oh, be grateful for that. But I mean, it is a thing. It happens more often. And it doesn't mean that the woman is, or the person, because women can do it to men too. Doesn't mean that that person is weak or bad parent or anything like that. But it is, yeah, it is something that it's kind of crazy to think about, like, oh, that's something I should be grateful for. But it is, and grateful for that I'm not that way to him, like that I have the ability and the coping skills and things like that to not have that type of relationship.
Right.
Because I've never been in like an abusive relationship. I was in one that maybe could have gone that way, but I ended it because it was negatively affecting my kids. And that's not how I was trying to raise my kids. So And my experience with my mom was a little different. I never saw her with any man. Her and my father, she left my father when I was like 2, I think, because of his alcoholism and things like that. And I never again saw her with any other man. So I never saw a bad relationship, you know.
Right.
Because probably for you, because of what you've seen and heard, is probably why you ended up in a healthy relationship. To where I'm not tolerating that.
I actually was in an abusive relationship that I didn't know it was abusive at the time. Mm-hmm. I was 18. The first time we were at his mom's house, we had gotten to an argument. We argued about everything. We got into an argument and I didn't drink until I was like 27, 28 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 18 at this time. He was drinking. I grabbed some beer. I drank some beer. And then everything else is really kind of fuzzy. We got into argument and I passed out and I was like, oh, my sugar's dropping. My blood sugar has dropped. I'm having a reaction to my diabetes. I need something sweet. Mm-hmm. Later on, I realized he choked me till I passed out.
Oh,
and I thought it was my sugar. Stayed with him a little while longer, got into a lot more arguments. He tried to sleep with my sister-in-law while I was away in Texas because he was,
you know,
and the time that I was like, no, I'm done, is I was watching my niece. My brother had been dead. It's his daughter. I was watching his daughter. He had been dead about 2 years or so. Uh-huh. And the guy tried to fight me in front of my niece. And I was like,
oh, this is
how my life is going. So yeah, you have to go. So I got all his stuff that was at the house and I put it out and told him he couldn't come back. And he didn't. A few years later, he called me and told me his mom had cancer and he just wanted to talk and yada, yada, yada. And then I come to find out his mom never had cancer. He was just trying to get back with me and it was not happening.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you got away from that because it's like there's people, and you know, this kind of goes back to the whole, this is our first time living. This is our first time parenting. We have to just learn things as we go. And sometimes we learn them harder ways than others. But there's a couple that works with someone in my family. And these two are like always arguing. They're always at each other. And, you know, the people that I know that work with them are just like, just be done with each other. You know what I mean? Like as outsiders looking in, it's like, we all know where this is going. And if this person isn't violent, y'all are still fighting all the time. So, you know, like they don't have any kids together or nothing like that. It's like, just be done with the situation.
Right.
Some people thrive on things like that. Some people just thrive on the drama and some people just get into bad situations. Like I said, it doesn't mean that the person is a bad person. Doesn't mean they're exactly weak. Doesn't mean any of that. Sometimes people just get in bad situations.
And it's hard. Like say, for instance, I'm not going to put any names out there because it's not my place to put names, mm-hmm. but I have somebody in my life who they're not having a great time in their marriage. And it's like, and I'm just going to put a random number. I'm not even putting the amount of time they've actually been together, but mm-hmm. You've been together, say 10 years.
Yeah.
Do you want to spend the next 10 years being miserable like you have these past 10 years? Like, I understand the first few years were great, but now these past few years have not been great. So it's like, I know this is what you're comfortable with. People hate change because I hate change, but you have to think about your future. You only have so much more time of your life. Do you want to spend the rest of that time living miserably the way that you are? Or do you want to try to start over and spend the rest of that time being happy with somebody else or alone or by yourself or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, because that's an option too. Just take some time off. Get to know yourself. Spend some time with yourself. Improve yourself. Improve what you're like. Or
as a teenager, you're a whole different person than when you are as an adult. So when people find their true love and their teenage love and they've married for the rest of their life, that is great. But that is not 90% of the world. It's like different people. You're supposed to grow. You're supposed to change. So of course, your first initial teenage love into your 20s or 30s or whatever, if it changes, I feel as you have every right, even if you may love the person, you still love the person. But if you're not happy, don't stay. You have every right to leave. And that's how I feel, because you change. People change. You know, one day I like chocolate. The next day I do not like chocolate. It's just
right.
Life.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And our, you know, our life experiences play into that, because I got married when I was 21. And then, like, I wasn't pregnant. We just got married because we wanted to get married. We got married when I was 21. Then we had two kids. A lot of things changed between 21 and 25 and 30. Mm-hmm. And that marriage didn't last. But we're wonderful. We co-parent greatly now. We're really good friends. And I know what he was put in my life for, to be the father to these two kids and to be a really good friend. And that's fine. Of course, being 21, I wasn't planning on getting divorced. I wasn't even planning on having two more kids, you know, but, you know, and then I did a lot of stupid things too. So it's like, by the time I turned 30, I definitely wasn't who I was at 21. Thank God. Cause I was a much better person at 30 than I was at 21. Yeah. And it can go both ways. You can be a great person at 21, fall off when you're 30, or vice versa. But we have to live life to learn things. And I would be fine with my kids not getting married until they're in their 30s. That's fine with me. If that's what they want to do, I don't think I would be supportive if one of my kids wanted to get married when they were 18.
Right.
Luckily, my oldest two are nowhere near marriage. They are living their lives, they're getting education, or they're working, or doing what they're doing, and they are focusing on themselves and everything like that. And that's great to me.
Yeah.
And may it be, because just like with us and seeing certain things with our mothers, may it be that they saw certain things that I went through and they're like, yeah, I'm good on that. I'm going to go live my life a little bit.
And we're going to put that on hold for right now.
Definitely.
Mine don't even want kids. And I'm like, I really want to be a grandma, like, no time soon, but can we, like, maybe think about this later? Okay, no kids now, but don't tell me forever. If you really don't want kids, just lie to me and let me think that eventually I might get a grandkid.
Yeah. See, I'm the opposite, though. I'm like, hey, if none of y'all want to have kids, cool. Now, I do have one who says she wants to adopt. Fine. Yeah. If the only grandchildren I have are adopted and not biological, that's fine with me. You know, I'm okay with that. It's whatever they want to do, as long as they do it safely.
Yeah.
As long as they educate themselves before they do it, live life a little bit.
Yeah. Mine is that she wants to adopt, and she says, which I'm perfectly okay with. I love kids. I don't care whose they are. And she says, well, what if I date somebody who has a kid? I said, that'd be the same thing as adopting. Just know that you and that person ever split up or whatever the case may be, that kid's still going to be in my life. I don't know about your life. That kid's still going to be in my life.
But I think that, well, I can't speak for you, but I know for myself, that would be a conversation that I would have. Like, kids are impressionable. And especially if, say, you date somebody with the kid, because my oldest is okay with dating somebody with kids. I'm saying I don't think you should, but it's your relationship. But whatever you do, set up a relationship in a way with that child's parent that you can still be a part of that child's life, whether y'all work out or not, on some level, because you can't come into a child's life and then just walk away. It does so much damage, and it's so unfair to that kid. So if you choose, I was like, you know, if you choose to get into a relationship with someone who has a kid, like, you, that better be important. And don't treat that like, okay, well, we didn't work out, so that's that kid's loss. It's like, that's a whole separate human being who is still forming their thoughts.
It had nothing to do with why you.
Yes. Yes. So regardless of y'all's issues, make sure you make it to where you, if you form a relationship with that child, that relationship can still be carried out in a healthy way, even if y'all don't work out, because it's not that kid's fault. And that's really the issue for me, of like, to where I kind of wouldn't want to encourage my kids to date somebody who already has a kid. Like, my son was talking to somebody and she has a kid. They weren't dating. They were just kind of getting to know each other. The kid's pretty small. There's baby daddy issues and whatnot. And I was just like, I'm not saying she's not probably an amazing person, but I would just be careful with that. It's a whole other, you know, it's a a baby, be careful with that. Be careful from your end. Make sure that you aren't missing any connections still going on the other end. And I mean, pretty young child. And make sure that you aren't a negative factor in that child's life.
Exactly. So, don't be more stressed than the child already has. Don't add to the stress.
Right. My fiance now, none of my kids are biologically his. So, but me personally, I wouldn't date somebody who already had kids. I have before, just like casually, and I noticed things, and it maybe makes me judge them a little more, because like, it was only like two guys, but both of them didn't spend enough time with their kids, in my opinion. And so that was kind of a turnoff for me. I was like, I don't know if I'm trying to date you, because you don't really spend a lot of time with your kids. That's not attractive to me.
Not at all.
And plus I have five, so like, we're good over here. I don't need anything else to take care of.
You can handle yours, that would be great.
Right. And I don't have a minivan, so like, where am I fitting these kids? I don't know.
I'm out of room in this car. You can buy me a minivan, but as of right now, I'm out of room.
Max capacity. Yes. How many kids are in your family?
In like, as in me and my husband or my entire family?
Like how many siblings do you have?
Okay. So God, I sound like Jerry Springer again. My dad has a son, or he had a son right before he married my mom. And then him and my mom had my two older brothers and then me. Okay. My grandparents adopted my dad's son. So legally, he's my uncle. My blood, he's my half brother.
Okay.
Then I have an older brother, and then I have two older brothers, but one passed away when he was 19. I was 16. Mm-hmm. And then this is more Jerry Springer part. My mom took in this girl and her sister and her mom and let them live with us or whatever. I don't want to get into a bunch of drama, but I've called her my sister.
Okay.
I've called her my sister since she was about 12 or 14. She is 30 now. Well, she married my older brother, so she really is my sister now. She's just my sister-in-law.
Funny how that worked out.
And I used to think, because there's a big age gap between the two, I used to be there for my brother because he's got two kids with one woman and then a kid with my sister-in-law. And then I used to babysit and do stuff like he used to take us places to go with his kids to help watch his kids or whatever. Uh-huh. And then he started taking her. And I was like, you can't take my brother. Like, I've only got one life. Like, what are you doing? And then little did I know, she wasn't trying to take the place of a sister. She was trying to be wifey. So I was like, Then my brother who passed away, he had a daughter. She was 14 months when he passed away. And then I call her mom my sister, because we've been through so much. I've known her since I was like 14, maybe. I call everybody family, but those are who, if you're going to ask about siblings, those are who my siblings are.
Well, I know, I get that, because I have one half sister and then I have two female cousins, and they're my cousins, but they're really more like sisters to me, because one, we're like a year apart, and the other one, I guess about 12 years apart. And so I go to her, the older one, for all the things that I go to an older sister for.
That's the one who was on the podcast?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really go to her for all things like parenting related, because she has seven. She had three and then twins, and then she adopted two girls. So she got a lot of kids, a lot of animals, a lot of life experience. I go to her for the big sister stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, kind of like you, like there's a lot of stuff that we can talk about. So she'll definitely be on my podcast more, just like hopefully you will, because there's a lot of stuff we can talk about, because I feel like we conversate really well. And, you know, you have a lot of interesting things to talk about, from life experience to viewpoint, and our life experiences aren't exactly the same. And that's fine. We share a lot of common views, but probably not everything exactly. And that's fine too, because I like kind of challenging conversations. Sometimes I like when you can feel or think or experience different than someone else and still talk about it, and like lovingly talk about it and not fight about it.
You're still my friend. My favorite color purple, your favorite color is blue, but you're still my friend. Like,
right. Exactly. Yeah. So I know you said having one kid, there's a certain level of stress. Then going to two, it's different. It's different. Mm-hmm. Stress loss, financial and everything like that. I know for me, going from one to two to five, but I had mine at different stages. Like, you know, I was single at one point, I was married, and then now I have a partner, which obviously makes a lot of things easier. And my two oldest kids have known my fiance basically their whole lives, not on the same level, like not as us being partners, but they've known him since before we moved in together and everything like that. Have you parented at any point kind of more by yourself, or have you and your husband been together the whole time?
So we split for a month before my youngest was born, and I moved back in with my mom, but I still didn't feel like I was parenting by myself because it was only a month and he still had her. Like, I'd have her 1 week and then he'd have her on the weekends or for a few days or whatever the case may be. And then when I was at my mom's, she was there to help. So I've always had help with my kids.
Yeah.
As they got older, and then as I brought another kid in, he helps. I'm not trying to like talk down on my husband or about, because I love him. He drives me crazy. Sometimes I really want to bury him in the backyard, but I do not think I will do well in prison. So he helps when I make it a point to say, hey, I need this, or hey, I need, it's not, he just don't think off the top of his head, like, oh, she needs money for the doctors, let me give her money. You know, it's not something like that he does. He provides, he makes sure that we have food and, you know, all the stuff like that. But I think that he feels, I want to say, disconnected, because they no longer do the things that they used to do. Like, they used to go fishing with them, and, you know, they're both girls and we wanted a boy. We didn't have a boy. It's fine. But he feels as though they don't love him because they don't no longer do the things that he wants to do. And he's not understanding that they're teenagers. Like, they don't, I force them to do things with me. Like, they don't have to. He gives them the option. Hey, do you want to go do this? Obviously, they're going to say no. They'd rather sit on their phones, on Snapchat. On So I feel like I'm trying to teach him that your kids do love you. They're just teenagers.
Yeah.
But as far as help, I feel like I've kind of always been kind of like the only one to, like, not be there for them, but doctor's appointments or school functions or anything like that, I've always handled everything.
Yeah.
So even with a partner, sometimes you kind of feel alone.
Yeah. I'm going to offer you some perspective, only because I've felt like that before too. And so I know how easy it is to, and I've asked, like, why is it that you only do this if I ask you to? And his response will be, well, because you just do things. They just see us just always do because it's our responsibility, and not because they don't think it's their responsibility. It's kind of like, okay, well, I don't know what you need me to do until you tell me, because you look like you've got it taken care of.
Right. Like, you're already doing it. So what can I do?
Or they might ask us and we're like, no, we're good, because we might need their help. But it's like, we're already in this routine. We've got this flow going, and I just want to get it done. But I think the fact that if you ask him and he's like, yeah, I got you, is great, because he's not denying help. And I only say that because that's something I had to kind of realize, and I didn't realize it, because I would feel like that a lot of times too. And sometimes I get aggravated about it. Like, why does it feel like I'm doing everything? Why is it that why don't you just do this? Why don't you just blah, blah, blah? And it's like, for one, you might not even let me because you want to just do it yourself, which I think we as moms do a lot, because it's like, we feel like if I ask, then that's taking out time from me just doing it. And then it takes more time for me to get it done, or you might not do it, or same with
might not try. You might not do it the way.
And I might have to go do it again behind you. Yes. So.
And now that you said something, I think I trained, quote unquote, my husband to be this way, because when we didn't move in together till my oldest was a year. And when we first had her, he still lived at his house and I lived with my mom, and he'd come stay the night. And anytime she cried, if he would get up to go get her, I would say, no, I have it, because he had a job and I didn't at the time. Yeah. So now that you say something, I think that I naturally just was like, no, I got it, I'm good, you go back to sleep or whatever. It's a me mom thing. Yeah. That kind of sucks.
Yeah. It's one of those realizations, like, oh, I probably made it that way, but it's not that I meant to. It just feels easier to do it that way.
Exactly.
But, you know, I mean, sometimes we don't know things until we ask. And had I not, and I was probably annoyed when I asked, it probably wasn't that I was just being nice and like, hey, let me ask you this question. You know, I was probably frustrated. Why don't you blah, blah, blah? So sometimes it's just one of those things. We don't really know until we ask, because we're so in our own perspective that we don't consider what the person that we're frustrated with is seeing for them to kind of do what they're doing.
Right.
I just thought I'd throw that out there. And, you know, give yourself some grace always. We have a lot going on in our brain. And I know with you and I specifically, the certain things that we've been through and experienced, we got a lot going on in here sometimes. And then we have to keep up with other people and make sure our stuff is done. Make sure we have clean clothes for people. Make sure we have food for people. And, you know, and it's just what we do as parents. That's what we should be doing as parents. But just because it's what we should be doing doesn't mean that it's something easy.
Check us out on YouTube at Rhea Hagues, R-E-A-H-H-A-G-U-E-S. You can also keep up with us on Instagram at Just the Who Podcast and Facebook at Philology.